Bunker Extra with Amanda Flanders.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, and welcome to the Business Bunker Extra Radio Show on bizradio.co.uk and channelradio.co.uk/2. It is Friday. It's the 1st of November.
I know, can you believe it?
I've just realised. I've only just realised it's the 1st of November. It's snuck up on us. Before we know it, it'll be Christmas. Yay!
Yes, I'm excited for Christmas, but it snuck up on us way too fast at the end of this
can
year.
Can I start my Christmas countdown now? I normally drive people mad from like the middle of September, don't
I? No, well, everybody, I'm not sure if you noticed this morning, like, I keep a track on socials like the second I wake up, and there's a lot of supermarket chains all doing their Christmas adverts today.
Yeah.
Do they normally drop on 1st of November?
Normally it's a little bit later, actually, but it seems to be coming a bit earlier. The second Halloween is over, you know, like 3 minutes past midnight.
To be honest,
Christmas adverts come.
Even in Maidstone, you see the lights starting to go up.
Yeah.
During October.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not even Halloween yet, guys. Calm down. Not that I'm a Scrooge, but it just seems a little
bit crazy.
A little too early.
It gets a bit crazy. Well, as you can hear, I am joined in the studio today by my fabulous co-host, the wonderful Ben Abbott.
Hi, guys.
Let me say the Maximum Media bit first.
Sorry.
They always forget to let me put their business name in. I've got to know who you are and where you're from. Move around a bit, sir. I can't see you.
Move around. Okay. I'm moving around, guys. Moving around.
And our guest is Chris Wilmot, who is director of Pentascape.
Good morning.
See, he waited patiently.
Yeah, see, I'm not patient. That's the thing, yeah.
You don't know
where to go. It's first of the month.
I know. First of the month. Just literally 2 months left, and then it's 2020. Yeah.
That sounds like we're definitely in the future.
Yeah.
anything beginning 2020 something feels, yeah, you know, like you're in reach the future.
Some sort of dystopian future.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Well, do you guys know the film Blade Runner?
Very,
the original?
Yes.
Yeah? Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Do you know that was set in 2019?
Really?
Yes. Paul gave me that fact the other day, that Blade Runner was actually set in 2019.
So where are all the hover cars?
Exactly. Thank God.
So I'm gonna be quite controversial. I've never actually seen Blade Runner.
No.
Have you not?
Yeah, no.
And
the thing is that I love those type of films as well. It's just one that I've never sat down and watched.
It's definitely worth sitting down and watching.
To add to
big
your
Harrison
list.
Ford fan, so yeah.
Add it to your list, definitely. So it is the 1st of November. We didn't have a show last week. I do apologise for that. We had to cancel it last minute. My doggy was very ill and I had to take her to the vets, which wasn't great. But we're back again this week. So we want to hear from you, the listeners. Is there anybody out there? How are you doing? What happens? Do you tend to slow down at this time of year? Or do you like, right, okay, last race, last 2 months of the year, let's go for it?
Last race.
Last race.
Yeah, last race.
Yeah, we noticed that. So, I mean, we'll probably come on to this a little bit later, but in the not too distant past, we were more like a web agency. Rather than the sort of hands-on consultancy that we are now.
Yeah.
And we noticed there was this big, big rush in November and December, and we had a theory that all it is everyone's like, oh, I really feel like I need to actually get something done for the year. So, you know,
everybody
all those
panics.
Projects we thought about doing, let's quickly send
let's
them off
do
to
them
all
now.
The agencies or any other digital agencies out there that resonate with that.
See, my days are really awkward coming towards the end of the year because my accounts are due in November.
Right.
Because my company started in December. So the end of November is like my final year.
Is that your rush year?
So yeah. And I'm just like, get money in quickly. So yeah, it's just going. I'm coming up to my second birthday in January as well. Second business, not my second birthday, obviously,
yeah,
but my second business birthday.
Yeah,
so you've got a very deep voice. Yeah. For
and a beard.
Yeah. And a beard. Very well advanced.
Yeah, so we're getting there. We're still around. It's a start, right?
You know what? Every year you're still around is
a good year.
It's a good achievement, definitely. We do want to hear from you, the listeners, though. It's a bit quiet out there in Twitter world today, but do give us a tweet at Bunker Extra with hashtag BeExtraBeBunker and let us know how your week's been and what you're up to. Are you pushing for the last couple of months or are you just calming down? What are you doing for now? We have had a tweet from Fruitworks over there in Canterbury. Then they've asked for a shout out because they're expanding. So Fruitworks is a co-working space and they've expanded small office units and fixed desk space available in refurbished offices in Fruitworks. So they've just literally got bigger. They've got more space. So if you're based in Canterbury or around Canterbury, it's a great co-working spaces are great, aren't they? Because you just,
yeah, definitely.
You can have
they
your own.
They are really taking off in Kent
yeah.
now. The last few years in particular, you've noticed this expansion. I mean, we're down at the business terrace in Maidstone. They've always had a waiting list. And we've always had to just expand. And there's more popping up. There's a couple more that have popped up locally in Maidstone. I'm not sure about other regions. But yeah, it just seems to definitely be catching in Kent. It's been in London for some time.
There's a new one being built in Herne Bay as well. They've just had all the funding received from the council and kind of raring to go.
I think it's a way because more people, although, you know, people don't want to travel up to London. They don't want to go into London to work. You don't need to go into London to work. You can work remotely from wherever you want to in the world these days with the power of technology and internet. And I think co-working spaces work well because although you can have your own individual offices, there is still a space for you to come together.
Yeah.
And especially when you're a small business or a sole trader, it's nice to have that communication with other people. Because sometimes it gets very lonely, doesn't it, if you're stuck in an office by yourself.
Yeah. That is quite a big, major thing. I think that's one of the reasons why co-working spaces work so well, especially with this big, I suppose, emphasis on remote working and how great it is. I take a slightly different stance on that remote working is probably fine for a small minority, but most of us are social creatures. We want to interact with other people. And
see, that's the problem
I
found.
The idea of sitting at home at my desk on my own is terrifying.
So I had an office where it was just me and it, you know, I used it as a studio. It was a decent sized office, but there was not really many other people in the building. So very rarely would there be people to have a conversation with. So I gave up the office. I didn't really use it that much because I was out on meetings and stuff and doing different bits and pieces. But it's got to a point where I'm now back working from home and I hate it. I hate it with a passion. I can't focus as well as I can. I like background noise. And when you just sat in the, I have to have like the radio on or something, listening to Business Bunker on a Tuesday and then Be Extra on a Friday and just have something on in the background. So I'm actually moving to a co-working space in January, which will be quite interesting because it's the first time for a long time that I've worked in an office with people. So I might find it really frustrating. I don't know yet, but we'll see.
I think a lot of it depends on your working style and how you like to, you know, what you need to do, sort of work you're doing. You know, and coming from a background in development, some of what we do very much is sit in headphones quietly and crack on.
Yeah.
But other times, you know, you need to get up, have a walk around, have a conversation, and just like, you know, have a passing conversation in a corridor whilst, you know, going to go and get coffee or something.
Yeah, definitely. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. I'm excited.
Well, see, I wonder, see, you go to two extremes, obviously, you're working by yourself, and then you go to a co-working space like Dragon. Do they actually do any work?
There's a lot of waffles.
Have you seen? They're always socialising. You know, they're pumpkins yesterday. And it's like, we were saying, do any of them actually do any work? Because they always seem to be doing the co-socialising bit of it rather than the working bit of it.
Yeah, Dragon's lovely as well. Roland's a really nice guy. I think they've got the community aspect down really well over there. When I went into Fruitworks as well, they seem like they've got something similar going on where there's a lot of people kind of just working together and, you know, it's nice. I think if I wasn't going to do it, I think I'd eventually go into a co-working space just because of the nature of the business.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you are, there's just one or two of you, then why not go and work in an office with a wider variety of people? Because more than likely you're going to get some business out of it as well as people get to know you and, you know, the know, like and trust, and you know, you build those relationships.
I think interesting enough, Amanda, just thinking your point on is there an extreme, is there a point where you in a co-working space you get no work done? I'm wondering why. I think the one person and two person offices are the most popular because you want to feel like you're in a sense of community. But when you actually need to sit down and get some work done, it's like, close the door.
Yeah,
like, please
don't
disturb me now so I can actually get some stuff done.
There's a difference. It is good. But let us know what you think out there. And in fact, actually, while we're talking about Dragon, what I love about Dragon, they also bring in people and they do lots of different networking events. And they've got an event coming up on Friday. Today.
Today
is Friday.
Today.
Tonight. Today. No idea what day it is. It's the 1st of November, which is their failure night. We can't use their correct name on air because it's a bit rude, but it is their failure night, which is tonight from 7. And they've got loads of speakers. So who have they got? They've got Molly. It's going to be, I'll tell you what, I'm so gutted I can't go tonight. Molly, Sean, who are the other two? Pete Allen. Sorry, Pete, can't remember your name. Pete Allen, and there's one other. Do we know who the fourth is? You're looking at, not sure.
I've been going and running around doing so many different events.
You got to remember who's where.
So many people
can't even remember. Sometimes I'm like, occasionally, I see my family. You know, it's been one of those sorts of last couple of weeks.
It's one of those. Yeah, hello, this is me.
Hi, hey, who are you?
But there, I know there's, obviously it's talking about things that have happened, that have gone wrong, that, and it's quite funny actually, because Chris did do a post on LinkedIn earlier this week talking about failure. And we do love the word failure here on Business Bunker, and we do often talk about it because it is one of those things, and it's something that we always say, in life, in business, you have to fail. You have to get it wrong. I think failure is a horrible word, though.
Well,
it's one of those words that just goes...
It isn't. Because I think maybe, I don't know, I mean, this maybe is a bit of a controversial point of view, but I think we've sort of unwittingly trained ourselves to feel that failure is a negative word. And it is, in a sense that it's used to describe when something breaks. You know, if, oh, the exhaust has failed on my MOT test has failed, it means that it's, you know, it sounds like it's terminal and then needs replacing. Mm. So, and that is descriptive of that. But there's fail to fail, and then there's failure and failing, and they kind of all sit in different places. But what the point I was getting at with my post is, it's almost learning how to fail and accepting that failure is fundamentally part of success.
See, now this is where my issue with it comes from. Don't get me wrong, obviously I'm all for failure and, you know, hating and everything, but this is my thing. If you accept that failure is part of it and it's acceptable, will you try as hard to achieve what you want to achieve? Or will you be, oh, it doesn't matter if I fail, so I won't work so hard?
That's a mindset thing though, isn't it?
Yeah,
well, it 100%. But that's my catch 22 situation thing, isn't it? If you're working so hard and putting everything into it to make sure that it's a success, you know, and you know you're working against it and you want to make sure you do everything you possibly can to make it a success, then somebody's going, but if you fail, it's fine. But then you're like, well, why do I need to put so much into it to make it a success?
I'm not sure it's necessarily fine to fail. I think as long as you learn from your failure, I think that's probably the biggest thing that I'd take from it, is that, of course, you will feel rubbish if you fail and you feel like a failure or something. You know, it is a natural kind of progression from it. But I think it's okay to allow yourself to fail, in the sense that sometimes it's, you know, you just realize it's okay. How do I learn from this situation? And I think the UK business economy, it's slightly different in terms of how they treat businesses as failures. So if a business completely fails and you become bankrupt in the UK, you can't be a director for a company for X amount of years. I'm not sure of the exact number of it. But in the States, you can hold a directorship and the bankruptcy is against you yourself, not necessarily against the businesses. That's why you find so many failed entrepreneurs in America then turn back around and make it. Whereas in the UK, it's slightly different, because if you fail to the point of being bankrupt, then, you know, you struggle for X amount of years to then kind of build back up on your feet. But, you know, you look at people like Jordan Belfort was bankrupt. And then he was able to make his fortune after that because he learned from his mistakes the first time. And I think the thing that we probably emphasize as a British culture is that failure is not acceptable. And without trying to get too political or anything about it.
Here we go.
But not political, but it stems from schools as well, is that they're making it so that you can never fail. So because if you come seventh in a race, you're still going to get a certificate or you're going to get a trophy. And I think sometimes the biggest lesson that people can learn is learn how to fail and come back from it.
Yeah, but that's the thing as well, isn't it? It's like with the generation, with our children these days, we're growing a generation of snowflakes. There we go, you came seventh, have a certificate. No, you didn't come first, you don't get nothing. You know, that competition and that drive should still be in you. Yes, it's okay if you don't, but still try your hardest to win.
I think that's the biggest lesson that I've probably ever learned, is that you're not always going to win. And the life that you live, unless you're massively gifted, which 99.9% of us aren't, you're going to lose probably 90% of your life. And it's just how you turn that losing into winning. And that enjoying that 10%.
See, I would say it's how you define winning and losing. And it is best words of wisdom I ever heard from my grandparents, who ran their own very successful business in the 1960s. And my nan, you know, she's very, very sad. She's got dementia now, and she doesn't even recognize who I am anymore. And, you know, it's kind of reached that stage. But about 5 years ago, my cousin and I used to go up drive from London all the way up to Yorkshire at least once a month to try and have a conversation with her. And one thing she said that's really stuck in my mind, she said, of all the things that happened and the success we made, it was the journey of getting there that we actually enjoyed the most. So in retrospect, it's this idea of measuring the race of, you know, winning or losing. It's the journey of getting there that counts. Now, I'll make a point here. I don't mean in the, oh, it's the taking part that counts. Because I immediately
yeah.
know.
We would go, yeah.
Yeah, that would be
don't
the
give
first,
me that rubbish.
Yes, no. But the point is, it's like mindset. Is where are you coming from? What do you want to get out of it? What do you actually enjoy doing? And the thing with failure is recognizing the more often you fail and you learn what failure is about and what you can do to do better next time, you get a sense for knowing when it's coming. So if you feel like a business is actually, I feel something's about to happen here and you act upon it, then you don't reach that stage of bankruptcy or complete failure of where you literally have nothing more you can do at this point. But you need to expose yourself to those sort of dangerous, what are previously labeled as failures, in order to understand how they work, what they feel like, especially in your own industry. And that's really important, because failure for one business is success for another. And this is how the economy works. Money just moves around. So,
And I think I agree with you there, is that for me, if I started the business and everything just came to me within the first month, you'd be like, oh, that was easy.
Yeah, where's the catch?
Yeah.
never happy.
But that's the thing. Like, imagine in 10 years' time, if the business deems to be successful, or it goes to that point where you look back and you think, do you remember that time where I was really worried about whether I could pay my rent that much? And it's those moments where you'll remember that more than, and I'm kind of sick because I really enjoy that, and I'm sure people get really frustrated with
but people work, I think you work better under pressure.
Massively.
I work better under pressure. You know, I don't do anything for an event until a week before and right, let's get it all done now.
Yeah, that was my entire degree.
just do it now. But I think also that then leads on to this, you know, we could do a whole show on this, couldn't we? How do you measure success? What does a successful business look like? What
I think
success
it's success
mean?
For you.
Exactly. Yeah. See, that's the
it
other thing, isn't it?
It has to be self-defined.
Either
self-defined as an individual, or, you know, if you're a company and you're building values and ethos and moral purpose,
because two people,
success is defined as that company.
Exactly. And two people can view it very differently. I could view success as a multi-million pound company with thousands of staff, but actually somebody else could view success as they get to take Fridays off and spend that with their family.
That's true.
And it's a lifestyle business, and that's success to them because their business runs so successfully Monday to Thursday that they get to have a 3-day weekend with their family. And, you know, it all depends on whatever makes you happy.
Yes. So I'm just discussing failure on the chat here about while we're recording. But I think that's another thing as well. And I guess, and that also highlights the thing with regards to social media these days, where you're comparing yourself against other people.
Don't get me started on social
media. It was just the whole thing though, isn't it? And it's just, nobody shouts about their failures. And they always go on about everybody shouting about the successes. Oh, I've done this really well. But and then they tell people they shouldn't do that because it makes other people feel bad. But you should do. If you've done something really well,
this is the great irony, isn't it? Social media is just like this great big curated version of, you know, this is a filtered, curated version of what my life is actually like. You know, and you could even say that you could even argue that for businesses. I mean, I was always very, very cynical, less so now, towards things like Twitter. And it's like, it's just marketing agencies working for companies all marketing at each other. I'm sure that is not the case, but that's certainly what it feels like when you're looking at it and, you know, trying to cut through the noise. And then it's like, or are you starting to do these things just because they're a PR stunt? Or are you saying these things because you think that that's what people think you should be saying? And it starts to become this, if you go into it too far, your brain actually starts to melt.
Yeah.
So some people will notice I've been more active on LinkedIn recently. And that's, I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to be myself. And I think that's the key thing. And that was kind of how I broke out of that barrier of being almost paranoid of going on social media and being worried that, oh, hang on, Chris is only doing these things because that's what he thinks people want to see. And I'm like, this is just me.
The second I stopped trying to be other people that I was copying on social media, the second my engagement level started rising.
Yeah, I've noticed the same thing.
And the second that people actually care about the content you produce, because there's so much fake entrepreneurship and fakeness on social media where I've seen it. mainly in property industry, actually.
Mainly
in property, where they will shout out about their million-pound property portfolio, but they don't own any of it. And it's so fascinating to me because they want to be seen as this guru, and then they slap a life coach moniker on their LinkedIn page. And I'm like, please don't tell me you take money to coach people's lives. And because yesterday you were a builder. And that's not necessarily to say anything about a builder, but you wouldn't necessarily make the jump from builder to life coach that quickly. There has to be a journey between that happens. And if people don't see that journey, why would I ever trust you to coach somebody or myself or one of my clients on how they should run their lives or run their business? I won't go into coaching because I have this whole thing.
Another whole conversation we could be having about that.
I won't go into that. But I think what you're saying is absolutely correct, is that I feel that businesses try to sugarcoat it too much. Mm. I do it myself. I'm trying to stop, but sometimes you just like, I really shouldn't
sometimes
post that.
You can't not, though.
Yeah, I really shouldn't post that.
We had a terrible month last month. Great, we're not going to do business with them then.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure that's what everyone
thinks.
But
that's the other thing, though, isn't it? You can't be then going complete reverse on social media and going, oh, you know what? Oh, yeah, I really mucked that up. It was complete failure. Everything's rubbish. Business is rubbish. I'm feeling rubbish. Because then people will go, ooh, not going to work with them. Mm. But I think, I say, it's the attitude and finding that thing. I put a post on Instagram the other day. On Tuesday, I had a really shit day. You can say shit on, by the way. Because...
Where's the line? Just so we know.
I know.
We only need a list
that's,
in front
that's
of us.
That's as high as you can go.
You can't say these words. You can't say these words.
You can say these words. Because, not because of my business, that was because of my horse, and she really hurt herself. For me, the whole day was a disaster day, felt awful. Of course, then when you're down and everything's feeling rough, you're like, everything's okay, that's it. Why am I doing this? I can't run our business. Life is great. And you go that way. So I just put one simple post saying, some days are shit. But then somebody came back to me and went, yes, but a day's only 24 hours.
This is true. There's always tomorrow.
It's always tomorrow. Yeah. And tomorrow it always looks so much better. Generally, hopefully. But that's the thing, isn't it? As you say, I think you can... You do on social media, you just got to be yourself and just say what you want to say, what you feel you want to say at the time. And when you have some success and something goes really well, why shouldn't you shout about it? You should be proud.
That can backfire, though. And this is one of the things I always get really paranoid with social media. It's just like, this is a permanent record of everything you've ever said.
Exactly.
So, I'm never going to do this, but if I ever wanted to become a head teacher in, say, 10 years' time, they'll say, well, Chris Wilmot said this really terrible thing. He's dropped the F-bomb 5 times in this LinkedIn post. He couldn't possibly be a head teacher. So I'm like, hang on a second. Whereas 100 years ago, before social media, if you said something really stupid in the pub, 10 minutes later, everyone's forgotten. Yeah. Yeah. So there is that element of, even if you are being yourself...
Yeah, you still have to be aware of what you're going
to
say.
You have to be aware. And it's, no one's 100% perfect. And occasionally something's going to slip out that's, oh no, actually I probably shouldn't have said that. And hopefully I haven't done it yet. But there is part of me that's like, should I have said that?
Yes.
And that's the thing is that, especially it happens with celebrities, that they'll search through their feeds from like 3 years ago when their Twitter first existed, and go so far back. And you just think you must have spent days just searching.
But probably because it makes a good news story.
Yeah, absolutely. But it happened with Kevin Hart recently. Mm. He was due to host the Oscars, I believe it was.
Yeah.
Something. And yeah. They went back through his feed from about 4 or 5 years ago, and he made what was an ill-judged comment about something to do with... it was a homophobic comment. And they found it, and he said... And they made him step down from it. And he was just like, I'm sorry, but I've grown up in 5 years. Like 5 years ago, me was a completely different person to 5 years later. And that's the thing, you just need to
almost
be
being punished for changing and growing. And
yeah, exactly.
Better,
But I think that's the thing now, is we are all very aware now that social media is here, and whatever you put online is there for life, no matter what. You can't delete it 100%.
Unless someone deletes the whole internet, in which case I wouldn't have a career or anything. Yeah,
it's
weird.
Like, we all went black. It all went dark. There was no internet. It was the end of the world.
I wonder what would happen.
My business
do you reckon you'd
would
have
be
anarchy, or do you think everyone would be like, oh, should we just like...
No, I reckon it'll be half and half. You'll have those people that will just go, okay, that's fine. Yeah, we can
just go live on a farm somewhere.
Exactly. Let's go back to how humans work. Exactly, humans, horse and cart and all that type of thing. Mm. And then there'll be those, they'll be like, I can't live without a computer. It's the end of the world as we know it.
well, the Instagram influencers, and I say that in air quotes,
this we'll is never get no to one live. Can see your
yeah,
air quotes.
I, that's why I thought I'd comment on it. Yeah.
No, I think it is, as I say, these are the conversations we often have on the show, and it is all down to personal opinion. I think you just, yeah, be yourself, but just be aware of what you're saying, because your potential clients are going to have a good old search. And you know what, you can find everything online. Even these people that claim to be millionaires and everything, that company check people. You can check you can check the how well their company actually really is doing. So there's no point lying or exaggeration. But if you do something well and you're proud of it, don't feel bad about it. Shout about it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is that just don't make every post something that you're shouting about.
No.
Because then people will stop caring. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, they're having a great time over there, and then
almost too great.
Yeah, and
it's
then
great all the time.
Yeah, so if it's great all the time,
still great. Oh, we hate you now.
Yeah, that good? I've actually stopped following two people on LinkedIn recently, and like in the past 3 days, because all they post is "I'm so great, I'm so great, I'm so great, my company's so great, my company's so great."
Harsh filter there.
But I know these people; they're not being successful. Like right. I know their businesses, and I was just like, you know what, I'm done.
So, yes, don't exaggerate.
Yes, and I know what they're going through, like business wise as well. And it's just fair enough. Celebrate your success, but don't lie about it, because they'll be caught out pretty soon, and it won't just be me. I won't tell anybody who it is, but you know,
tell us afterwards.
You just put two and two together, and you think, well, actually. You know, that's, you're just lying at this point.
Just keep it real, people. Keep it real. And never go political. Never go political. Anyway.
No.
Never go political, because that was just suicide.
Yeah.
Anyway, I love that conversation. We could have kept that going for ages, but we do need to move on. So we're going to go for our break, musical interlude. And then when we come back, we're going to actually find more out about Chris and his business.
Brilliant.
And why he doesn't want the world to go dark and black out. And
that
not
would be preferable.
Have any technology, because you could start building things out of wood, I guess.
Yeah, sometimes I do that.
We'll be back right after this.
Training solutions for the glass, glazing and wider construction industries. fitfortrade.co.uk for occupational compliance and peace of mind.
Jobsinkent.com, the quick and simple way to advertise your job vacancies in Kent, with prices from just £99 per job per month. Visit Kent's largest job site, jobsinkent.com.
Rift Accounting, your small business bodyguard. Riftaccounting.com.
This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker Extra with Amanda Flanders.
And welcome back. You are listening to the Business Bunker Extra radio show on bizradio.co.uk and channelradio.co.uk. It is Friday, the 1st of November. Pinching a punch, first day of the month, no return. Can't reach you though, it's trouble.
Snapping a quick for being so quick.
But I said no return, so you can't do that.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Yeah, see,
I'm
doing
it. Anyway.
I am joined in the studio today. I know. But see, I'm an expert at that. By my co-host, who is the wonderful Ben Abbott from Maximum Media.
Hello again, guys.
And our guest is Chris Wilmot, who is director and co-founder of Pentascape.
Hello.
Pentascape. So did you decide...
It's almost like you can't say the word
Pentascape
without saying it.
Pentascape. Did you come up... Did you want a one-word name as well? Did you want... Right, okay. Virgin. Pentascape.
That's a really interesting question. So,
yes.
The name is actually 10, 11, 12 years old. So before going into sort of development and technology and web, it's funny, I mentioned on a post earlier on LinkedIn, it's been over 10 years since I was in a radio studio and I was going to go into film and television and audio. And it was just a random... So this is really sad.
There are many people like
we like sad stories, so this is very sad, very nerdy. So before the days of Facebook and social media,
can't anyone remember what those were like?
Yeah. This was at uni. We had a forum that was like the place where everyone went, and I was called Scape on there. Don't know why, it's just kind of made up and it stuck. And then the first time I went into freelancing, I thought, right, I need to come up with a business name. So I just thought, well, what are all the different things I do? And I wrote them down on a list and there were five of them. And I thought, okay, Latin for five is penta, yeah, as in pentagon.
Yes.
And then scape, so pentascape. And then so that's stuck from there.
To me, it sounds like some form of pentagon escape room.
That also sounds amazing.
You should do that as like a business.
I really like the idea of that with like VR headsets and stuff.
Yeah, you have five points in a room.
Can you imagine? That would be amazing.
Five puzzles.
Oh, look, there we go. Was this sorted your new business idea there?
That's, I thought it was bad enough having a business idea every 5 minutes. Another one's really great.
So, okay, so let's go. Let's scrape it back, right back. Let's find out more about you and the business. So, you haven't always been into the technology world as such, or have you gone straight into it? Did you study it? Did you?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. So,
okay,
I was
got
probably
10 minutes,
right? I've got 10 minutes. Okay, so in the beginning, and then and that's the end of the show.
And there we go. In the beginning,
so I'll do my very best to summarize the contents of my brain.
Oh God, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, that is not going to happen. But yeah, I think I was probably one of those I would say oddballs at school, and I'd kind of everyone thought I was academic, but I gradually realized that I wasn't.
Oh,
I was,
okay.
Yeah. So I was getting, you know, good grades and then I did A-levels and I did really badly.
Oh, okay.
Compared to where I was before.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, this is interesting. I thought I'm supposed to, you know, continue down this route. And when it came to looking at university degrees, most of my mates, most of my peers were like, what job is it you want to do? Therefore we work out what degree. And I was like, I have no idea what I want to do. I'm just going to pick something that looks fun. So I ended up doing what was called then multimedia design and technology. I think you'd call it digital now. But yeah, it was in the days of Flash and all sorts of weird stuff like that. So yeah, just a side story. This is, I don't know if there are any parents out there, but my son came home once singing Badger, 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 Mushroom, Mushroom, which is an old, really
yeah,
old,
I remember that.
Sort of, I suppose, pre-meme days.
Yes.
That went around the internet. I was like, how on earth do you know that?
It all comes back round.
It does
right?
come back yeah. round. So that was weird. So yeah, so I came from that sort of era and I had literally genuinely had no idea what I was going to do. I spent a year trying to get into film, television production. I got in touch. The closest I got was speaking to one of the producers of The Mighty Boosh, one of my favourite shows on at the time. I had a conversation and... actually got an opportunity to go off and do a 7-week sort of like as a runner, paid runner as well, which
is extremely rare.
And it involved leaving my house, leaving my flat. I'd actually already met Liz at this point, who's now my wife and also co-founder of Pentascape. So there's history there. And I just thought, actually, no. All of a sudden, I felt like, no, this is not what I want to do. I want something a bit more stable and certain rather than running off into Europe on my own for 7 weeks, which some people probably would have really enjoyed it. I don't think I was going to enjoy that. So I thought, okay, what else can I do instead? And I thought, hang on a minute, I can write some code. Maybe I can do that. So I went down
that route. And I guess it was still quite early in the age of digital and internet.
Not just that, but I was still quite young. And I think there's this misconception that you have to know exactly what it is you're going to do.
Yeah.
And it's, so what career path are you going to go down? It's like, it's a little too early to push people into, you know, so
they still do these days. Yeah. I mean, they're beginning to wave a little bit more, especially now apprenticeships are a lot more now known and preferred, but the schools still are. So what are you going to do when you grow up, when you get older? And they're like, well, I don't know.
My university asked me to come back and speak to the students, and I made it very clear. I said, well, I'm happy to do that, but what I'm not going to do is tell them that university is the end all or be all of their work life, because genuinely, I didn't learn that much from university.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that. So, again, going against this whole, you know, you go to university to do a specific degree, which sets you off in a particular career path. You know, most of what I know now and deal with today didn't even exist when I was at uni. So, but I found uni so valuable. But I found it valuable because it almost taught me how to socialize, how to, you know, come into contact with loads of different people coming from loads of different backgrounds, which itself was also really interesting. And just kind of a bit of a 3-4 year period of discovering what I'm actually interested in. So the fact I did quite a general course, I think if I'd done something more specific, I probably would have been one of those ones that stopped after the first year and then went and did something else and that kind of thing. Because I genuinely had no idea what I was going to be doing. So I thought, this sounds fun and interesting. Yeah, I'm going to go and do that. You know?
And it's funny, actually. I worked in training for quite a few years before I started my business. And all the time they were like, what made you really want to join training? It was a job. I never thought I'd ever work in training. To me, it looked boring when I was at university, and it did. But I was like, you know, that's not a bad paying job. So, you know, I'll take that. And then stumbled onto it. I actually really enjoyed it. But everybody's like, what made you want to join this company? And I was like, money? Like, I don't know how to answer that question.
I wanted a job.
Yeah.
So then you took the route and you started to say write code.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd always had an interest in, you know, how things work, taking things apart, and trying to understand, you know, how to build stuff. And I was always tinkering with things. And I thought, okay, how can I choose a route that makes sense? And I'm just going to go and do this for a few years. You know, I still, you know, hadn't got onto the housing market or anything. And I thought, okay, let's go and get a job, go and work hard for a bit, get some money behind me, go and, you know, buy a house, that kind of thing. So I just picked it because it seemed like there was quite a bit of demand at the time. So this was sort of mid to late 2000s.
God, it makes me feel so old.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago.
I won't comment.
It feels like a long time ago for me because I think technically I'm a millennial, but I don't feel like one. It's one of those.
Yeah, you're probably on the edges.
I'm just on the border.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, you millennials, you know, don't realise what it was. I was like, yeah, I had dial-up, so. I
had dial-up as
well. I remember dial-up.
Yeah, having to ask permission to, you know, use the internet because it was...
Well, the second the phone rings, cuts out. Yeah, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm borderline. Yeah. But yeah, I thought, right, I'm going to focus in on this. And yeah, worked for a software agency in Kent for 6 years. So kind of really cut my teeth.
Oh, well, good. Okay.
In that, you know, doing the work, putting things together, gradually worked my way up to being technical architect. So writing less code and doing more of trying to work out how to fit lots of different systems together. And then I kind of had this urge right when everything was, you know, really good job, stable job, decent salary, have a mortgage, had a 18-month-old. I was like, should we start our own business?
Yeah, of course, isn't it? Should, you know,
and then all of my family, like, this is like not the best time to start your own business. And I was like, no, it is the best time. I'm not, you know, not getting any younger. Why not do it now? What is the worst that can happen? You know, I knew that the skills I had were in demand. So worst case scenario, I could always just go and look for another job or do something else. So that was fine. And my wife, Liz, we just had our first son. Yeah, he was 18 months old and she wasn't working at the time. And she was facing the challenge of, if you're out of work for too long, we won't get into the whole women in business, tech thing, because that is a whole nother conversation, which I have views and ideas on as well. But basically, we're like, okay, so if no one's going to employ you unfairly and not employ you because you need flexibility around work, why don't we do something together? And we'd always worked together on stuff at uni because we met at university, and we'd always helped each other, say this very carefully. We helped each other.
You helped each other, yes. Liz, we're noticing all this. It's been recorded down, Liz, so we can't take any of it back.
This is documented forever. You know, as for me earlier, so worried about things being documented.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Forever.
Yeah, it's exactly. So unless the internet switched off, in which case we're fine. you'll just find me drinking tea and chopping wood.
Yes.
So we just thought, yeah, let's do it. Let's go for it. And we had complementary skill sets. So Liz kind of took on the design side of things. I thought I'd do the coding. I was like, yeah, we can make websites. It's not that hard. And then reality struck. So spent the last 5 years learning how to business, really. You know, everything from accounting, cash flow, getting clients, marketing. It's just been a 5-year journey from then. So,
well, that's the thing, isn't it? And that's the thing we all,
because you're not taught
all,
that.
No, and that's the thing we all fall into, isn't it? It's like, yeah, you know what? I'm really good at this. I can do a business doing this. And then you're actually like, oh, but I don't actually know how to run a business.
Yeah,
because it can't be that hard, can it? You know, running a business, it must be really easy.
It's awkward giggles. Silence over the radio.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think. I mean, yeah, it is. It is very hard. And even if you you've got that sort of drive and conviction that you know you've got something and you can do something with it, and you want a bit more control, which is kind of, I suppose that was the driving factor for me. I wanted to be able to control my own time and where I was going and what I could do with the skill that I had. And it's a kind of like an iceberg, as you know, because you see the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. That's the bit that you see people, you know, you see, if you know someone who's in business, especially if they're a friend or a family member, there'll be times they have really tough conversations, or their head's in their hands, or they're working out what to do. The bit under the water that you don't see is all the sacrifice, the, you know, the mental health side of it. And it's this very, very deep part of it that no one really understands or talks about unless you actually go through the experience yourself. And they're like, right, now I really see what this is about.
And I think that's the difficult thing, is that I'm always happy to take advice from people, but only if they've been in the situation that I've been in. And this is the difficulty that I have when, you know, parents or friends want to try and give you advice on how to run a business.
We have to go against
advice on people.
In fact, to be really fair, our family were really supportive. They was like, you know, ooh, this isn't something that it feels like a good idea, but, you know, I never did that when I was younger. So yeah, go for it, do it. You know,
exactly.
What are the risks?
Yeah, and they're like, our parents' generations are, well, no, you know, you leave
work
school,
for one employer,
you
for,
get exactly for 30, 40 years,
safety and
retire,
of the job,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that sort absolutely. Of thing. And I was like, yeah, that's true. There's nothing stopping me going back to doing that if it completely falls apart. But here I am 5 years later, and it hasn't completely fallen apart, and you know, things are getting better. So it's just a continuous journey.
So tell us a little bit more, because we are running out of time. But tell us more about what I'm going to say is, because we had a conversation a few weeks ago, and I actually loved what you were saying about, so Pentascape, you work in the digital world, technology world. But what you said to me is, very often people will create solutions for problems. So, you know, there's a technical problem, this is a solution. But what you said is, what you do is, your clients will come to you and say, this is a problem we've got. So then you create a specific solution for their problem, because not one solution will fit all.
Yeah. And this is something I've kind of started to observe with the trend at the moment with technology, is everyone's, you know, potential clients, so business owners who are looking for a technology-based solution and suppliers of those technology solutions, ourselves included, I just want to be very clear, we're just as guilty of doing this as well, but it's more of an awareness thing that we're starting to get into, is we focus too much on the solution and not the problem. And going even a step further back, it's almost like, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Who is it for? So I've taken more of an interest recently in kind of personal interest, and then try to embody that into the work that we're doing. It's not just about, people come to me, can you build an app? It's like, yes, I can build an app. I'm capable of building an app, but what's it for? Who's it for? And once you start to get inside it, often, surprisingly often, you know, that's not actually the best solution. It'd actually be better off just with a Facebook page. I mean, really? But, yeah. So you're not going to try and, you know, sell me an app? Like, no. Because, yes, I could. And I'm sure there are plenty of people out there who would just seize the opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
But I want to do things that are genuinely fun and interesting to get involved with, that are solving a real problem. But yeah, I think what Pentascape is trying to focus on is aligning digital solutions and technology solutions with the people and the businesses that actually are using them. So kind of going up a layer, and rather than specifically building one specific solution, we're trying to say, right, is that the best solution? How can you connect these different things together? That's the great thing about, you know, technology now, the cloud, how everything is now designed, is you can put something together so fast. And some people will come in with a predisposed idea as to what's possible. And so don't worry about what's possible. I know what's possible. Come to me with your problem, your challenge, and then we'll try and figure out what makes sense for you.
And I think that lacks from quite a few tech companies as well, because this is quite a broad statement, but typically people in tech don't necessarily have the social skills that, say, somebody else would. But that's the difference, is that the tech companies that are successful are those that understand the need in terms of what the business is actually looking for, rather than, yes, I can build an app, because people can learn how to build an app. It's something that the tech side as a skill will always be there. But if you want lasting client relationships, it's not about the tech side, because they really don't care.
And the tech changes.
Yeah, exactly.
If you get too close to the tech solution. I mean, I was having a conversation with someone the other day at the Business Terrace about, well, it's the problem with developers is they... I feel like I can say this because I am a developer.
Exactly.
So I'm allowed.
I can say this. I've worked with plenty of developers and tech companies.
But, and, you know, and again, I'll be really clear, I do fall into this trap as well, but I'm trying very hard not to. But developers get very comfy with a particular platform or solution they know.
Right, yeah.
And then that then becomes the solution, even when it may not necessarily be right for that particular client.
Yeah.
Someone comes along and, you know, oh, I need an app that's going to do it. I'm going to say some stuff. Doesn't matter if you don't know what it is. Oh, we're going to build it in Node and React, and it's going to be on Amazon, and it's the blah, blah, blah. And it's like, actually, that's because that's what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose what I'm getting to is we're trying to advocate a little bit of respect and acceptance for being a generalist rather than a specialist.
Yeah.
There's such a big focus on, well, what do you specialize in? I kind of specialize in being able to see everything.
Yeah.
But does that make me a generalist? Maybe it does. But, you know, I feel like that's where my skill set is better placed than going in doing, that's the stack I know. That's the solution you're going to get.
Which is good, because if you specialize, air quotes don't work really on it, but if you specialize, you're very narrow-minded and like tunnel visioned about the solution, as you say. But whereas if you're general and you're open, then you can find the correct solution rather than just the one solution. So tell us more, because we're running out of time, and I want to find out more. What specifically does Pentascape do? What services do you offer? What do you help clients with?
So
generally,
generally, or specifically, I think this is something that, I'll be really honest, we're still trying to
define. We don't know. we don't know what we do.
Spend the past 5 years, because we know that it's it's not what people think it is. So sometimes people come to us thinking that we just build software, we build apps, build websites, and we can.
Yeah.
But we like to do that as part of a sort of wider organizational change. So I will attempt to answer your question.
Yes. So if you think about if a client, if what's, what does a typical client come to you for? What do you help a typical client
so
with?
So step change. So I'd say step change is definitely...
Yeah, that means straight over my head.
So if you're... So it's a point in a business where you are making a big, significant leap.
Right.
So you can imagine that in maybe three sections. One is a startup.
Mm-hmm.
And by startup, I mean where tech is fundamentally part of that business. So it's a platform or a product. Usually they do need some funding behind them. I'm happy to have a chat with people about about startups, you know, over a pint in the pub.
Yeah.
But yeah, we tend to engage with people who have some kind of capital behind them. And they're saying, right, we want to make sure that the path we choose, we're using the right technology, the right platform, understand the business requirements, who are your customers, what are we trying to do here? And to build what in the industry we call a minimum viable product. That is something, what's the absolute minimum we can get away with to test that your idea actually works?
Yeah.
So instead of, you know, you want to spend the least amount possible or rather invest the least amount possible. So if it happens to be wrong, especially if it's a new product no one's ever done before,
yeah,
which doesn't exist.
So basically somebody would come to you and go, this is what I want to create.
Yes.
And you would build it for them, what they want to create.
We may build it, but we're effectively like the architect of a city.
Right.
So
design it, not necessarily
design
build it.
Who's going to use it? And there's a lot around who are your customers? What are their needs? How do they work? How do they think? What do you need in the business?
Yeah.
And kind of designing the entire infrastructure around how that works. If it's small enough and simple enough, then yes, we will build some of those components, or we may help you outsource that, or we'll help you find a supplier. Because, you know, that point about being generalist, we are not especially great at doing one specific thing really well. We're trying to join the dots together between all of those different things. So, you know, tech startups that do work with us really value what we do. And everyone we've worked with have said, you're more like a partner than a supplier. So we're kind of almost like you, instead of having a CTO and, you know, production manager and a development team, we can kind of...
You'd fit those roles for them.
Yeah, we'd fit that space. Yeah. And if we didn't have the capacity, we can find people very easily that, you know, to deliver that work.
Because you've got the connections and everything.
So that's one.
That's one. We are running out of time. 1 minute, tell
so
us the
I'll
other
summarize
two.
Your two. So the other two. So the other two is, again, so thinking about company turnover size. So if you're at the kind of the £1 million plus mark and you've already built a lot of systems that are in place and you're realizing that actually these don't really work, they're not fit for purpose anymore, and you reached a threshold, you now need to sort of change the tech underneath so that you then can expand and scale. And one of our services is software renovation. So we'll actually go in to a piece of software and change it in situ. It's like changing the tires on a car whilst the car's still doing 70 miles an hour down the motorway. And with it, so you can still use it in production.
Yeah.
Eventually, you know, the whole broom handle analogy. So you change the handle, you change the head. Is it still the same broom? Maybe in spirit.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But then, you know, over time, you say, yeah, now you can scale from 1 to 1,000 and it's actually capable of doing that. So.
We're going to find out number three next time you come back. Because we literally have got to the end of the show.
Very good.
Do tell, give us a quick shout out about how people can find you. Where's the best place for them to find you?
So, yeah, we've website, pentascape.com. We didn't get on to Dev in my team.
We need to do that. We'll have you back on in a little while. That's fine.
Yeah, we can do that.
Love having guests back.
To be honest, the best thing to do is to reach out to me on LinkedIn.
Perfect.
That is kind of where I'm hanging out at the moment. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Chris.
No problem.
It is one of those things, we always run out of time when we've got such interesting things to talk about. We'll be back next week. Well, I'll be back next week. My co-host is the wonderful Gemma Fairclough-Haynes, and our guest is Sandra Lamb. Don't forget to listen to Paul's show on Tuesday, 1 till 3. He has more great guests. Have a great weekend, everybody. Don't forget, be careful and safe around those fireworks. We'll be back next week. Bye for now.
Bye, guys. See you later.
The Business Bunker Extra with Amanda Flanders.
This is Channel 2.